manager of the ID building.
Somewhere and come back in and all been thrown back into a big trash heap. So every attempt that I made to retrieve anything that was important was thwarted by her and her people. I could talk about my daughter, who I had to go get her, and I wanted to know from her exactly what had been boxed to make sure that I remembered correctly, and she got extremely upset because all of her things were strewn all over, and that all of her dolls, her brown skin dolls, had been stripped of their clothing, and their hairdos, which were fancy braided hairdos, had been ripped apart. And the bee.
Sick.
It was very sick. Very, very sick. I mean, that's what I mean, that, that's why I kept wanting the police to come and look at it.
They would, because
but they wouldn't.
Mr. DA was there.
That's right. That's right. I mean, even though removing the property was illegal, it certainly wasn't necessary to do those kind of really sick things to a child's belongings. And the only other thing I have to say about it is that I had to take her and arrange for her to be at somebody else's house because she was so upset by it. And she leaped out of the car just before I was going to go to come back for one last thing that she wanted, and one of Nadine's goons yelled, "Get out of here, nigger," at her.
So it was basically racial motivated as well.
I don't know, but you know what? It felt like a hate crime, and it felt like a battering, and it's been a pretty abusive relationship all along with the Hanards.
How long have you lived here?
This would have been the beginning of my fifth year here. And, you know, some people have asked me why I took it so long, and the choice is often you put up with that or you're homeless.
Right.
And that's not fun.
Exactly. Okay, thanks for talking. What's your name again?
Kate Burns-Barnett.
Kate Burns-Barnett.
I just want to say something else that I'm not going to say where I'm living now.
Makes sense.
For a lot of reasons. But I do want to say that the owners and managers where I'm living now are as wonderful and as supportive and unprejudiced as I could ever want.
Okay. Thank you very much for talking with me. This is Skidmark Bob, 89.3 Santa Cruz Free Radio, and this is the On Scene Report.
Somebody, there'll be no trouble having a child. have that issue of warfare. Pull back as we'll attack with these. Depend on the way so it's happening. You the first for the beat to get by. Yeah! First for the beat to get by. First for the beat to get by. First for the beat to get by, baby. Ain't the blue gun is goodly hearted. Goodly hearted, maybe I'm changing soon. Keep the beam on the sacrament. The father knows, oh, you know. You can't depend on any churches unless the real estate that you want to buy. Can't depend on a lot of things. Busload of beat to get by. 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 Can't depend on your miracle. Can't depend on the air. Can't depend on the wise man. Can't find them cause they're not there. Can't depend on cruelty. Cruelty of all the sound. Can't depend on the worst always happening. You must go to bed to get by. Let's go to bed to get by. Let's go to bed to get by. Let's go to bed to get by.
I'm sick of seeing my tax dollars being used to perpetuate hate, to agitate, dominate, and intimidate, to assassinate, devastate, and isolate, to pave the way to force our will on others. I'm sick of not seeing my tax dollars being used to celebrate faith, to educate, emancipate, and rehabilitate, to radiate, compassionate, and incubate, to say okay to love all men as brothers. I'm sick of a system that doesn't work, being used to fabricate armor plates, to separate, delineate, and regulate, to manipulate, alienate, and indoctrinate, to delay the day when we love as mothers. I'm sick of its doomsday dismay, this judgment day passion play has overstayed its time.
Time. the decision was that 6-3 decision expanded the power of the government to investigate individuals not suspected of wrongdoing on athletic programs in schools. And even the San Francisco Chronicle, normally a horrible paper editorially, had this to say about the supreme slippery slope. Civil libertarians are properly worried about the U.S. Supreme Court ruling that for the first time permits public school officials to randomly test students for drugs as a condition of playing interscholastic sports. In its 6-3 decision, the High Court greatly expanded the powers of government to investigate individuals who are not suspected of wrongdoing, but left open the question of whether schools could subject all their students to routine drug testing. Writing for the majority, Justice Antonin Scalia placed the issue of privacy on a slippery legal slope that begs to be abused, especially by government zealots in the flagging war on drugs who praise the decision as another weapon, quote-unquote, in their arsenal. It does not take much imagination for a police mentality to extend the ruling from student athletes to all students and eventually to all citizens. Quote, deterring drug use by our nation's school children is at least as important as enhancing efficient enforcement of the nation's laws against the importation of drugs, Scalia wrote. He breezily dismissed concerns about the violation of student athletes' privacy with the fatuous reasoning that school sports are not for the bashful. They require suiting up before each practice or event and showering and changing afterwards. Public school locker rooms, the usual sites for these activities, are not notable for the privacy they afford. We fear that Scalia has forgotten his own school days. There are great differences between showering with teammates and the humiliating intrusion of being required to present a urine sample on demand. In 1989, Scalia dissented in an opinion upholding a federal drug testing program of Customs Service employees seeking sensitive jobs. At that time, he described the programs as a, quote, kind of immolation of privacy and human dignity in symbolic opposition to drug use. Scalia's eloquent 1989 defense of privacy should apply to student athletes as well as customs agents. And I certainly agree with the Chronicle there. And incidentally, I'm interested in anybody from the schools who has any sense of how civil liberties are proceeding here in Santa Cruz for students. There were some lockdowns of campuses, I guess, a year or two ago for freshmen that couldn't leave campus during lunch. Don't know if it was related to drugs or downtown ordinances, the sit-on-the-sidewalk laws. I'm interested in hearing a lot about youth issues because the youth curfew issue is going to become a hot issue in the next month and a half. Already, Mayor Jordan is pushing for a curfew strongly in San Francisco because there's been some beatings up there over the last week, and youths are being blamed. In Oakland, Oakland has essentially rejected a curfew. San Jose has a curfew, and I've talked about that on the air in the past. So does Palo Alto. There's anti-homeless laws spreading out of cities in San Mateo County. And I'm hoping that we can get some information from Lee Alton, a homeless activist from the Urban Campers Hour that I unfortunately missed an opportunity to be interviewed on and to get information from last week. We're coming to the end of the hour, but I'm gonna go over the hour. So if my next talk show successor, and I think that may well be Pagan or battling Bob LaMonica of the Recall D.A.R. Danner campaign, feel free to burst in. I mean, I may have to end the show pretty abruptly, be carried off here, but I'll continue a little bit longer. Battling Bob LaMonica. Although I don't want to leave the area of this stupid Supreme Court decision, I want to talk a little bit more about it on drug testing, random drug testing of student athletes to engage in interscholastic athletics. Incredible. But regarding battling Bob LaMonica and the campaign to recall Art Danner, he has a show here, which I believe... Yeah, it's on Fridays from 1 to 2. He was talking to me on Friday after my show, and he was telling me how the police have been called on 4 times to go after his Recall Art Danner crew. And each time the police have said, no, you're okay, you're allowed to get signatures here at the shopping center and so forth. But... the harassment continues to happen, and he continues to need people who are interested in signing up registered voters. I think that September or October is his cutoff point for the Recall R. Danner campaign when he needs some 14,000 odd signatures. D.A.R. Danner, as probably everyone who's listening to the show knows, or perhaps not, is there are a whole number of reasons why ordinary citizens might consider it time for him to hit the road, ranging from the Catherine Gardner case, or, I'm sorry, the Sandra Larson case, where in 1987 he hit her car and then had her drug tested and took no test himself. Eventually, he was cited for failure to yield right of way. And all the way down to the most recent Catherine Gardner case, which was going to be a lawsuit, but I think the suit was dropped. She was an assistant DA that was on administrative leave back in March of 94. She was fired on July 20th, but Danner falsified time cards, or I beg your pardon, it was at his direction that her time cards were falsified for 17 weeks, where she got $30,000 in benefits because he didn't want to drop her at a time when there was an election campaign going on. And that was rubber stamped and whitewashed by the city. So anyway, you might be interested in contacting the Recall R. Danner campaign. That's at 457-2670, and volunteering a little time to do signatures. Bob, who's a tireless worker, battling Bob LaMonica. We call him Bashful Bob? Nah, that's not right. Battling Bob, I think, is good. He can use all the help he can get, and he says that he thinks that there really is a chance of succeeding in this campaign. I don't think so, frankly, but he does. And I think that the effort is worthwhile, and the educational effort is certainly an important one. And you have an option there. And again, the number to call for the Recall Danner campaign is 457-2670. So more on the silly drug decision. Art Hoppe did an interesting column called The Great Virgin Hunt. Art Hoppe is a humorist in the Chronicle who did the following response to that decision, 6-3 decision, saying that he tried to go out for school sports, you got to take a piss test, random piss test. Not if there's a real cause for concern, but just randomly. As a matter of right, your piss belongs to us. The Great Virgin Hunt is what he calls his column, Art Hoppe. No one was more overjoyed by the Supreme Court's approval of random drug testing for high school athletes than the Essential Values Coalition. This is not only a blow to the evils of narcotics in our nation's schools, said the coalition's chief coordinator, the Reverend Titus Torkey, but we can now be sure that the court will uphold our nationwide virgin testing program. The virgin testing program got off to a somewhat controversial start at the Sweet Apple, Texas High School last September. Two of the school's 23 pom-pom girls and drum majorettes were to be selected by lot each month to be examined by a gynecologist in hopes of reducing the scourge of teenage sex. A 17-year-old student, Mary Jane Pickney, an honors student and a member of the Sweet Apple Baptist Church Choir, immediately brought suit against the school board, charging a violation of her Fourth Amendment right to be secure in her person, quote, against unreasonable searches and seizures. If this is not an invasion of privacy, she said in her suit, what is? The Sixth District Court of Texas, however, denied her claims. In reasoning, much like Justice Scalia's in the drug testing case, Judge Homer Bigfoot Collins wrote, the question here is whether the search is reasonable. Does the right of the individual under the Fourth Amendment outweigh the legitimate concerns of the state? In this case, he said, the court finds that deterring sex among teenagers is at least as important as enhancing efficient enforcement of laws against drug taking. Sex, after all, leads to disease and unwanted pregnancies, and it definitely takes the students' minds off their studies. The court also found that Mary Jane and the other 22 girls were role models, and the very sight of a pregnant cheerleader would be detrimental to the moral well-being of the other students. Mary Jane's parents, Mr. and Mrs. Albert Pickney, vowed to take the case to the Supreme Court. To say that a gynecological examination of a straight A member of the Rainbow Girls is reasonable, said Mr. Pickney, boggles the mind. In its decision Monday on drug testing, however, the Supreme Court agreed to have upheld the state's right to inspect virgins as well. In the majority opinion, Justice Scalia held that the effect of a drug-infested school are visited not just upon the users, but on the entire student body and faculty as the educational process is disrupted. As the Essential Values Coalition's Reverend Torkey pointed out, a sex-infested school is just as disruptive. Once the Supreme Court has ruled favorably on virgin testing, the coalition plans to extend the project to all the nation's schools. Eventually, the Reverend Torkey said, the tests would apply not only to athletes and cheerleaders. If we are to rid our schools of drugs and sex, he said, clearly the urine or private parts of all students must be inspected regularly. The penalties for failure of a virgin test would be the same as those for a drug test, he said. A strict warning to the parents the first time a girl lost her virginity, a 30-day suspension for a second time, and outright expulsion for the third. Three strikes and you're out, we say. That's Art Hoppe's The Great Virgin Hunt in the San Francisco Chronicle, and indeed it has been found by the Supreme Court, 6-3, that it's okay to demand urine of high school students on a random basis if they are in sports programs. Another example of the erosion of the Bill of Rights that's happening here in the United States with each passing day and unfortunately with each passing term of the United States Supreme Court. I think that we should probably start segueing out here. But if anybody has any comments, this is your chance to give a call to 427-3772 at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM. If you've got anything you want to announce that you think is relevant to the kinds of subjects I've been bringing up, oncoming demonstrations, public hearings, things that the community needs to know, now's the time to call, or actually any time is the time to call Free Radio Santa Cruz, the radio station here that takes its community responsibilities seriously. We're going to segue out. We'll give you a minute or two to pick up that phone and give a call to 427-3772. And if you don't, we're going to leave with the music of Peggy Seeger, Songs of Love and Politics. And the song that you're going to hear is going to be the song of choice, which we occasionally go out on. Peggy Seeger is a fearless, beautiful singer whose song of choice was written back in the 70s, 1973. It was written for a yearly political review called Festival of Fools. And I think it's still quite personal, although some of the references are old, and you got to be in your 40s to remember them, but it's not hard to pick up on. So let's go out with a song of choice by Peggy Seeger, and let's get ready to get together again next Friday at 10 o'clock, perhaps with poet Bert Glick, possibly with some young people on the curfew, particularly if you give me a call at 423-HUFF. And if you have stuff you want on this radio show and you're not going to be around during that period, call me between shows, and I will try to put some of that stuff on, do some investigating, and raise those issues again, around poverty issues, around the issues of civil rights here in Santa Cruz. So this is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM, signing off for the moment. Signing off for the day. Signing off until next Friday at 10 o'clock in the morning when we hope to be with you again.
Early every year, the seeds are growing. Unseen, unheard, they're out beneath the ground. Would you know until the leaves are showing that with weeds all your garden will abound? If you close your eyes, stop your ears, hold your tongue, then how can you know? For seeds you cannot see may not be there, seeds you cannot hear may never grow.
In January you still got the choice. You can cut the weeds before they start to bud. If you leave them to grow harder, silence your voice, and in December you may pay with your blood. So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth, take it slow. five others take the lead, and you bring up the rear, and wait till you can say you didn't know. Every day another vulture takes flight, there's another danger point every morning. In the darkness of your blindness, the beast will learn to bite. How can you fight if you can't recognize a warning? So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth, take it slow. Let others take the lead and you bring up the rear, and later you can say you didn't know. Today you may earn a living wage, tomorrow you may be on the go. Though there's millions going hungry, you needn't disengage, for it's them, not you, that's fallen in the hole. So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth, take it slow. Let others take the lead and you bring up the rear, and later you can say you didn't know. Today the soldiers took away one, tomorrow they may take away two. One April they took away Greece, but surely they will never take you. So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth, take it slow. Let others take the lead and you bring up the rear, and later you can say you didn't know. It's alright for you if you run with the pack, it's alright if you agree with all they do. If fascism is slowly climbing back, it's not here yet, so what's it got to do with you? So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth, take it slow. Let others take the lead and you bring up the rear, and later you can say you didn't know. The weeds are all around us and they're growing, it will soon be too late for the night. If you leave them on the wind that around the world is blowing, you may pay for your silence with your life. So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth, and never dare. And if it happens here, they'll never come for you, because they'll know you really didn't care.
Yeah. the branches. Name the branches.
The legislative branch, or Congress, the executive branch, or the president, and the judicial branch, or the Supreme Court.
What is the job of each branch? What is the job of each branch?
Most people agree that certain drugs have the ability to destroy minds. Addictive drugs like heroin or cocaine can induce a powerful habituation that can destroy a person's ability to be patient or to concentrate. Powerful ethyl alcohols like beer and whiskey can rapidly confuse a sober mind, and when taken in sufficient quantities for prolonged periods of time, alcohol will render a person's mind inoperable for the most simple tasks. So too with psychotropic compounds. Some drugs can scramble a person's mind directly. But drugs provoke other effects in people, and these effects occur even in people who do not ingest drugs. Effects like fear and misconceptions and inaccurate beliefs about drugs are all evidence of a mental distortion. Believing, for example, that the much-vaunted war on drugs is a useful pursuit is itself a hallucination as profound as any induced by an actual chemical compound. The war on drugs does not seem to be a useful pursuit at all. In fact, it looks like a particularly damaging distortion of the public mind and a preposterous remedy to cure what is really a simple medical ailment. For example, newspapers and news magazines and television and movies portray African Americans as the primary group of people who take illegal drugs and abuse legal ones, as if African Americans take drugs more often than do other Americans. This is a distorted version of reality. Compared to whites, blacks are far less likely to abuse drugs. Dr. Louis Sullivan, the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, has pointed to a nationwide survey of high school seniors that revealed that between the years 1985 and 1989, 89.3% of white male students had used alcohol, but only 72.5% of African American males had. Even more interesting is that cocaine use among white students was nearly double that of blacks. Similar findings were unearthed regarding the use of other drugs. White students consistently consumed more drugs than did black students. So here we have an example of a genuine mind-altering effect or distorted perception triggered not from ingesting actual drugs, but from prejudiced ideas. We are living with many such distortions. Today, any adult can saunter down to a local convenience store, gas station, or supermarket and buy tobacco and cigarettes. Anyone can smoke tobacco if they want to. But these days, smokers are increasingly limited to smoking outdoors or at home or in their cars. Smoking cigarettes has become such an unfashionable thing to do that smoking is now banned outright on airplanes, in many restaurants, and in many places where people work. As a result of this mild pressure, millions of people have quit. Smoking is considered dirty, smelly, and unhealthy. It's not only true that more than 300,000 people die every year from smoking cigarettes, but the Surgeon General's office claims that tobacco addiction is stronger than heroin addiction. That's right, it's more difficult to stop smoking cigarettes than it is to stop taking heroin. But a distorted perception of drugs makes us see things very differently. We are presented with a contradiction. Mild pressure to reduce the fierce addiction to smoking cigarettes makes people stop smoking. But fierce pressure, including massive firepower exerted by the police and other law enforcement agencies, seems unable to stem the lesser addiction of heroin use. What's wrong here? Our perception of drugs and their effects and how to remedy the situation all may be seriously distorted. These distortions and misconceptions about drugs are eroding American society faster and more deeply than any of the drugs are. For example, the 4th, 5th, 6th, 8th, and 14th Amendments to the Constitution have all been seriously undermined or overturned because Supreme Court justices have leaped to panic decisions founded on erroneous ideas about drug use. In today's drug war America, people who are presumed to be innocent can be searched at random without the need for a warrant. In fact, buses traveling in the United States are often stopped by police who search the bodies of innocent passengers as well as their luggage. Private, even fenced property can be not only searched the same way, arbitrarily, it can and often is seized by police. These seizures can happen even before a person is charged with a crime, let alone convicted. Lawyers who defend people who are presumed to be innocent can have all their legal fees taken from them. Prosecutors can hold people without bail. These startling developments continue. Today, American citizens can actually be held twice for the same crime by both state and federal governments. Police can obtain search warrants on the basis of nothing more than anonymous tips. The reason given for dismantling so many constitutional amendments is always the same. The imperative to fight illegal drugs, like cocaine or heroin or marijuana. It is now estimated that the cost of America over the last 25 years is $500 billion to wage this war against the U.S. Constitution and against erstwhile innocent citizens. There are today more American citizens serving time in federal prisons just for petty drug charges than the entire population of federal prisoners at the time Ronald Reagan took power. Our ability to examine drugs and mandate their use rationally seems to be seriously impaired. Let's look at some figures. The National Center for Health Statistics says that yearly deaths due to heroin and morphine combined are about 2,400 people. The numbers of deaths attributable to cocaine and crack is 3,300. There are no deaths attributable to marijuana because marijuana does not kill. The total number of people dead due to using heroin or cocaine is 5,700. Now, the death of more than 5,000 people is a tragedy, to be sure, but it's not, comparatively speaking, a greater tragedy than other health hazards. AIDS, for example, is a much greater emergency than either cocaine or heroin. 31,000 people died from AIDS-related problems in 1990 alone. AIDS is spreading rapidly among individuals who are sexually ignorant. AIDS is guaranteed to mushroom in the future. Cocaine and heroin use is going down, not up. But we have undermined our Constitution, seriously injured our Bill of Rights, and gone broke to fight drugs that are relatively easy to stop using and easy to control. Deaths due to alcohol, including drunk driving deaths, total about 107,000 people a year, 20 times the number of deaths due to all illegal drugs combined. Alcohol use is also declining. But even the staggering number of deaths due to alcohol pales when compared to deaths due to the most addictive and dangerous drug of all, tobacco. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control now pegs yearly tobacco-related deaths at 400,000. 34,000 people. We should also remember that legions of Americans stop smoking every day. And think about these legions of new non-smokers. People stop smoking in a friendly way. They stop for their health. They stop for other people's health. They stop because smoking is too much hassle in restaurants or on airplanes. But nobody stops smoking cigarettes because the police threaten to lock them up for the rest of their lives. People don't stop smoking cigarettes because their house or boat or car is seized by the police, or because gang-related violence seized illegal shipments of cigarette cartons from abroad. In fact, some people continue to smoke and nobody cares. Some smokers have cut back dramatically and only smoke a few cigarettes in the evening. Nobody cares. We don't see the Supreme Court shredding the Bill of Rights because people smoke cigarettes, not even because nearly 500,000 Americans die every year from tobacco addiction. We do see the court wage a war on our rights in the name of illegal drugs that kill only a tenth as many Americans a year and are, according to medical experts, easier to stop using and to control than tobacco. Smoking tobacco is responsible for one out of every five deaths in the United States. Cocaine and heroin do not even come close. Marijuana isn't even on the list. But over the last 20 years, $500 billion went up in smoke fighting these three drugs. Tobacco claims more people every year than alcohol, cocaine, crack, heroin, morphine, all the suicides and homicides in the whole country, all fires, all car accidents, and all deaths attributable to AIDS. Tobacco kills more people than all of these combined. But despite the 500,000 people who died from tobacco, we do not wage war against it. Although more Colombians have died from smoking American cigarettes than have Americans using Colombian cocaine. Obviously, people who use heroin or morphine or cocaine or crack can and do develop pathological conditions and endanger their health and the health of others. No doubt about it, these are dangerous drugs. But since it's easier to stop using them than to stop smoking tobacco, there's absolutely no reason to scrap the U.S. Constitution because 5,000 Americans die from a treatable habit. But that's what we're doing. Physicians and other healthcare professionals administer and regulate drugs far more dangerous than cocaine and heroin on a daily basis. Medical professionals can and do treat addicts as patients, not as criminals, with far greater success and with far less damage to the rest of society than vanquishing these hapless souls in a brutal and expensive war. The success now against the horror of tobacco addiction is the most compelling evidence yet. Decriminalization is safer, more effective, and a more sensible route to choose than enacting repressive laws that turn America into something it never intended to be, a nation of minds warped with distorted and ignorant images. This is Hugh Downs, ABC News, New York.